Don't Move a Muscle, the podcast is starting.
Hello and welcome to Podtrificus Totalis, a Harry Potter read-along podcast. I'm your host, Cassie.
And I'm Joe.
And we are here to do Chapter 9 of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, Grim Defeat. We always start our episodes off with a chapter summary, which we try to do in 30 seconds or less, and it is Joe's turn to do that chapter summary. So I'm going to get my timer out, and he is going to read the summary that I'm sure he prepared in advance.
I did.
Ooh.
It's typed and everything.
All right, so whenever you're ready.
After Sirius Black failed to get into the Gryffindor common room, they made every student in the houses sleep in the Great Hall while teachers searched the school. Dumbledore talks to Snape, who suggests Black had inside help, and it was a mistake to appoint someone, presumably a new teacher. Next is Quidditch. Malfoy is still pretending to be injured, so the Gryffindors are playing Hufflepuff instead. During the match, Harry sees a big dog and then 100 Dementors, who cause Harry to hear a woman pleading for Harry's life, to be spared, and then she's murdered. Wonder who that could be. Harry passes out.
Yeah, you're done.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. You were almost there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that chapter.
It's that chapter. That's the whole chapter.
Yeah.
Harry passes out.
Yep. And that's how it ends. Well, there's a little bit more, but we'll get into it. So, yes, this picks up kind of directly from the cliffhanger of the last chapter, where there was the attempt by Sirius Black to break in. So the fat lady is gone, her portrait is ripped, and everything's kind of chaotic.
Yes, he didn't make it into the dorm room, into their, like, Gryffindor common room.
Yes.
But it is still frightening to know that he got into
the castle at all. Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we'll talk about that. So they gather all the students into the Great Hall, as Joe said, because they want to search the castle and figure out where he went.
So sure, search the common room still, but we already know he couldn't get into the Gryffindor common room.
Well, yeah, but then he can just like find a broom closet to hide in.
Yeah, but why are you taking them out of the thing we already proved he can't get into?
Oh, okay. That's an interesting point. I didn't think of that.
Now they're just going to sleep in the cafeteria with the many entrances?
Well, we've talked about all the entrances to the Great Hall and how there is not a discernible number because they come in from different directions.
Yeah.
At different
points.
Which
means there's a bunch of different ones.
Right. But I guess the idea is like, let's get everybody all in one place so that we can keep an eye on them and keep them all safe while we do our search.
And they don't even leave a teacher to defend
the
students.
So that's what I want to talk about. Dumbledore places the head boys and girls and the prefects in charge of watching the students in the Great Hall while the staff searches the castle.
And Percy takes great joy in this.
Yes, Percy loves that power.
I don't know how effective he would be in terms of defending a pile of students from Sirius Black.
Right. It's a strange choice. I mean, I understand wanting to have as much manpower as possible to search the castle, but like...
Yes, spread out, make sure he's not like dodging the teachers and like...
Leave one teacher in there.
You can spare someone.
Just one. That's all you need.
Yeah,
I did think it was interesting, though, that Dumbledore instructs the prefects to send word with one of the ghosts if something should happen.
So ghosts are there watching as well.
Yeah, but I thought that was an interesting security system because like if, let's say, Sirius Black shows up in the Great Hall and the prefects see them, the ghost goes to deliver that message to the teachers who can come and stop him, I guess. But the idea is that like a ghost can't be intercepted or hurt on the way to deliver that message. It's not send Percy.
And they get to beeline it. They get to just cut straight through the castle to
right.
The, to
they
a
can
teacher.
Go through floors and walls and whatever. So I thought that was an interesting idea.
Yeah. And also they're kind of useless other than that.
Right. So it's a good security measure. But I think that the other important security measure would be to put, say, a fully trained wizard into the room with them.
Yeah.
And like the other thing, too, and this is something we'll get into with traveling in and out of Hogwarts, but this would be something that you would alert the ministry about, would it not?
I feel like Dumbledore is going to want to keep this to himself until necessary.
Hmm.
He made sure that the Dementors were aware of it.
Right, but he stops the Dementors from aiding them in the search.
Yes, he does. He makes a point after Percy asks him why the Dementors didn't want to come. Dumbledore does say there will not be any Dementors in this castle while I'm headmaster.
Right, but you would think that because everybody in the ministry is on high alert about Sirius Black that the ministry would send some people. Although I guess the ministry might be like, well, we've already sent our dementors, and so that's all we're going to do. We need the other people to be searching London or England or wherever.
Yeah, like there's a good chance that there are people staffed like just outside of mm-hmm. the perimeter. I'm sure there's plenty of people in, say,
Hogsmeade.
Hogsmeade. Mm-hmm. Yeah, forgot. I wanted to say Honeydukes. I'm like, that's not right. It's not just Honeydukes.
So you can't be expected to remember any of this. Yes. So they are all in the Great Hall. Dumbledore conjures up a bunch of sleeping bags for them. And there's a weird moment where Harry like stares up at the ceiling. He's like, this is kind of like sleeping outside. It seems like not a fun event for them all, but it is interesting. But Ron comments that Sirius Black must have lost track of time and not realized it was Halloween, because Hermione says it was lucky that he broke in tonight because
it was the one night they weren't in the tower.
Right. They were all at the feast, presumably late at night when they would ordinarily be in the common room.
Yeah.
So Ron is like, oh, well, he must not have realized it was Halloween.
Which, honestly, if you're on the run, like sure. you can't really go into public spaces.
Yeah. You're not picking up a newspaper.
I've been, you know, in my apartment and had access to technology and a phone in my hand that will tell me the date and time, but I still fully lost track of the days while we were like in hardcore quarantine.
Yeah. And keep in mind, too, that he broke out of prison.
Yeah.
I'm sure that time gets fuzzy in prison as well.
Yeah.
It's not like he was like, oh, well, it's March 20th, so today I'm going to break out of prison. But I think that the Halloween thing is important because Halloween recurs throughout the series. Of course, we remember in the first book, Quirrell sets the troll loose on Halloween mm-hmm. to make his attempt to go through the trap door, his unsuccessful attempt. And Chamber of Secrets.
The Death Day Party.
The Death Day Party. And do you remember what happens after the Death Day Party?
I should. Shouldn't I?
As they're leaving, they discover Mrs. Norris. So that yes. is the first night that the basilisk attacks. So weird things tend to happen on Halloween. I am inclined to think that this was not just chance timing. I don't think that Sirius Black was like, it's Halloween. It's today's the day.
Today's the day.
But I think that we should keep track of like,
when things happen.
There's an energy around Halloween. There's a vibe around Halloween. And there's another big event in the series that happens on Halloween. It has already happened in the timeline that we're talking about, but we don't know that it was Halloween at this point. So I don't want to get too deep into it, but Halloween is a significant date for the Harry Potter series.
I do like that. I fully forgot the actual plot events that occurred in the last book.
You remembered the Death Day Party.
I remember the Death Day Party. That's the fun part.
That's the part you were interested in, not the petrified cat.
Yeah, I didn't love the cat's blood.
Yeah. Well, was it Mrs. Norris's blood?
Was it not?
I thought it was chicken blood.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah, because Mrs. Norris, she was fine.
She
wasn't injured.
I assumed she was injured. I knew she wasn't dead. I knew she was just petrified.
We've never received any indication of that.
Yeah, they did say it was chicken blood.
Mm-hmm. So the other thing that they talk about before they're forced to go to sleep is the students are speculating on like how Sirius Black got in. And they're like, oh, maybe he apparated or maybe he flew on a broom. And
am I the only one who is bothered to read Hogwarts history?
Yes, Hermione. Yes. Hermione gets incensed because she's like, they should know you can't apparate in and out of Hogwarts. And if you tried to fly a broom into Hogwarts, obviously the Dementors would see you. They're standing guard.
And there's no disguise that could fool a Dementor.
Right. And this is an interesting point that is brought up. And I don't think this has ever been mentioned before, that you cannot apparate in and out of Hogwarts.
I don't believe it has been.
Right. But again, flashing back to Chamber of Secrets, Dobby apparates in and out of Hogwarts.
Well, we never see him apparate.
We do. I went back and checked. When Dobby appears to Harry in the hospital wing, when he's regrowing his arms, and they hear the teachers come in because they're bringing Colin in after he's been petrified, Dobby disappears.
He disappears, but we don't explicitly know that he apparates.
Right. So I did do some research in a 2004 Q&A. A lot of the interviews with J.K. Rowling that I end up sourcing are kind of just Q&A's where like fans get to either stand up and ask a question or they submit the questions beforehand, like online. So in a 2004 Q&A, a fan did ask Rowling about this. How did Dobby you know, get in and out of Hogwarts if you can't operate in and out of Hogwarts. And she explained, he's a house elf. They've got powers wizards haven't, but wizards have also got powers that house elves haven't.
Yeah.
It's not a satisfying explanation.
I'm okay with that explanation. I was aware that house elves could operate, right. But I feel like he always disappeared silently.
I would have to go back and look. I don't remember exactly. But it's an interesting thing. I just like of all the careful plotting that she does in the series and all of these silly explanations that she comes up with to explain things that really didn't need to be explained, for this one to just be, well, house elves are different.
It makes sense.
It's fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't need every question answered. It feels like you can't apparate in and out of Hogwarts, but she needed Dobby to be there in Chamber of Secrets, so we just kind of fudged the lines there.
She uses it later on, yes, in a lot of ways that I'm happy with.
Yes. So I think it comes together and it's fine, but I did want to comment on that. So the kids all go to sleep. They're forced to, basically. Percy's like, stop talking, lights out. Harry, Ron, and Hermione whisper amongst themselves for a little while. Mm-hmm. But then...
Why do you think Dumbledore chose purple sleeping bags?
I feel like Dumbledore wears purple. Like, I don't even know if he wears purple in the movies. Just in my head, Dumbledore always wears purple.
That's like classic wizard.
Right. Maybe that's where it comes from. The like wizard outfit with like the stars on the purple hat is just how I imagine Dumbledore. That's possible. I don't know. It made sense to me that the sleeping bags were purple.
Could he not think of a color that wasn't used in the houses already?
They're orange. There's no orange in the houses.
I guess so.
Yeah. So whatever. The sleeping bags are purple.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
It's his favorite color, I guess. So the kids all go to sleep. Harry does overhear a conversation between Dumbledore, Snape, and Percy, of all people, which I understand Percy is head boy. Is he head boy of Gryffindor or head boy of the school? Like, is there a head boy for each house?
I think he is head boy of the school.
Okay.
I think there is one head boy, one head girl. Because the head girl is his girlfriend.
Okay. Okay. So now it makes a little more sense why Percy would be privy to this conversation.
Well, I think he was being nosy. He doesn't like participate in this conversation very much. He's like just outside of it. And Snape clearly is not happy that he's nearby.
Right. So we do discover where the fat lady is. She's hiding in a map of Argyllshire. Galadriel notes that Argyllshire is famous for socks, and I can't tell if that's a joke, but in the real world, Argyllshire is a county in Western Scotland. I couldn't find any connection between Argyllshire and socks. I think that maybe Galadriel's making a joke about the pattern Argyle, because that is a common pattern on socks.
But
okay. I don't know. I still have not successfully tracked down Galadriel Waters, so I can't ask her and find out.
It also mentions that Filch will restore her.
Yeah, and I thought that was interesting that has artist skills.
Well, that's what I'm still hung up on. Is she torn as well?
The portrait was ripped. I don't know if she is like cut by that or something. I kind of assumed that he would... You know, like how you do an artistic restoration, you have to like
sew it back together kind of thing.
Sort of. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I that's kind of what I assumed it meant.
Because we already saw earlier how paintings and pictures can be harmed when Ron stains.
Mm-hmm.
I forget her name.
Penelope Clearwater.
Penelope Clearwater's face.
Yeah.
So I don't know what kind of damage she has. And she is like hiding and refusing to come out from behind trees, according to Peeves.
Right. I have to assume that that is like a highly skilled thing, though, restoring paintings, especially magical paintings. So yeah, I thought definitely. It was interesting that that fell to Filch.
He has a lot of skills.
Yeah. I did start thinking, though, of the only artistic restoration that I'm really aware of, which I know you like.
That's a very good painting.
The Jesus painting that somebody really messed up.
Just fully ruined in the best way.
Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what I imagined happening with Filch restoring the fat lady's portraits. But Harry overhears this conversation between Snape, Dumbledore, and Percy, apparently. And Snape says, it seems almost impossible that Black could have entered the school without inside help. I did express my concerns when you appointed, and he's cut off by Dumbledore.
I do not believe a single person inside this castle would have helped Black enter it.
Right. So Snape's suggestion there is that the castle is so well guarded that how could he have gotten in without someone helping him? That much is clear. And Dumbledore shuts that down.
And when he says, I did express my concerns when you appointed.
Right.
It sounds like it would be someone that was appointed recently. So right. That does seem like it points directly to Lupin.
Yes. We could entertain the possibility of Hagrid because technically
Hagrid was
appointed as a teacher.
But he was the master of keys before this. If he wanted to let someone in, he could have done it.
The keeper of keys.
Yes.
Don't give him a promotion he hasn't earned. But yeah, the idea there is that Hagrid, we have learned things about Hagrid's past that are surprising, let's say, like that he was expelled for opening the Chamber of Secrets, which he has been cleared from. But presumably, if Hagrid had some kind of connection to Voldemort or Sirius Black, Snape would have voiced those concerns prior to Hagrid becoming a teacher. I don't think that was the breaking point.
I don't think so.
So we have to assume that it is Lupin. And this raises a question, of course, what connection does Lupin have to Voldemort, to Sirius Black, to the Death Eaters, whoever, that would make Snape nervous, that would make Snape voice his concerns to Dumbledore? Obviously, we don't have an answer to that question right now.
Not yet.
It does raise that what does Gladriel call it? She says, like, HP sleuths take note. She calls you a sleuth like Nancy Drew, you're sleuthing, you're finding the clues. Mm-hmm. It's an important clue for things that will happen later. And I think that the other important suggestion about that, though, is that Snape's attitude toward Lupin that we've seen to this point and that we will see in a couple minutes in the chapter
distrust.
It's distrust, but it's not just that he wanted the Defense Against the Dark Arts job.
Yes.
Because to this point, we've seen him be kind of rude to Lupin and we can kind of assume it was just, Snape wanted that job and he's mad that anyone took it. There seems to be something more here, something that Snape knows about Lupin that we do not.
Mm-hmm. And then Sir Cadogan.
Yes, Sir Cadogan takes over the job of guarding Gryffindor Tower because he was the only one who would do it. All the other portraits were too afraid.
The bravest of the portraits.
Yeah, which fits the character well.
Yeah.
He's a mess, though.
Yes, he is challenging all the students to duels and is changing the password twice a day.
Yeah, and that's going to become an important plot point in a little bit, too.
Is making it very difficult for even the students to get in. We see Harry walk out of the portrait very early in the morning and is immediately yelled at by Sir Cadogan. I'm just like, basically put up your dukes. We're on. I'm going to.
He's a fun character. Yeah. I like him a lot. And Harry is on security detail now, or security detail is assigned to Harry.
Yes.
People are escorting him around. And
teachers are conveniently following him around.
Yeah. And McGonagall considers pulling him from Quidditch practice because she's like, it's outside, you're not protected, and they settle for...
This conversation happens after she calls him in with such a somber expression on her face. Harry thought someone must have died.
Yeah.
And this was her trying to tell him, you can't practice Quidditch at night anymore.
Harry, of course, is able to appeal to her competitive nature and be like, we're facing Slytherin. I have to play Quidditch. I have to be at practice. And McGonagall settles for Madame Hooch watching their practices and standing guard, presumably.
Which kind of should be happening anyway.
Right? I feel like, they shouldn't just be allowed to use the Quidditch pitch unsupervised.
Right?
Maybe, I don't know. In my head, I always kind of imagined that Madame Hooch has an office out there.
She has to walk a long way every day to...
This is also the first time we're mentioning Madame Hooch in a book.
Yeah, I don't think she's mentioned at all in the previous one.
In Chamber, no, I can't think of any instance of Madame Hooch being referenced.
If she was at all, it was very offhandedly.
Yeah. But Madame Hooch is back. And she's going to be watching over their Quidditch practices. And I did like to, when it's describing how teachers are conveniently following Harry around, Percy is also conveniently following Harry around. And Harry thinks that it may be
Molly Weasley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I love Mrs. Weasley. But like it all fits. It all comes together nicely because remember Molly was like very reluctant about not necessarily sending Harry to Hogwarts, but she's very worried about Harry's well-being.
Yes.
So speaking of Quidditch, they do have an upcoming match against Slytherin. But the Slytherins back out of the game owing to Malfoy's injury. And I did air quotes for that.
Yes. Perfect for podcasting.
Yeah.
Air quotes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I did them next to the microphone so everyone could hear them. And I want to return to a conversation I feel like we've had in like three different episodes about having subs for the Quidditch players. Clearly, they don't have subs at this point, because if Malfoy not being able to play is just like, well, Slytherin just can't play this match.
And like they went out of their way to move the matches around
right.
for Malfoy being injured, but they just canceled everything when Harry was injured in the first one.
Right. Yeah. It's so wild. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, I guess you could argue, well, first of all, Harry suggests that Malfoy is not actually injured and they're just trying to get out of playing Gryffindor.
And that is true.
And that is true. And we also have to remember Malfoy has a lot of influence in the school.
Yeah.
So I'm sure he could have just
His
complained
father.
To daddy. Yeah. So the Slytherins back out and now they are going to be playing Hufflepuff in the upcoming Quidditch match.
With a brand new seeker, Cedric Diggory.
Oh, boy. Let's talk about Cedric Diggory. So,
he is the tall, good-looking one.
Yes.
Strong and silent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Cedric Diggory. Cedric Diggory. I'm sorry, Oliver. I have a new boyfriend. It's Cedric Diggory. My boyfriend, Cedric Diggory, is mentioned in this chapter for the first time.
I mean, it's Oliver's last year here, so.
I know. So I had to, you know, swap out for a younger model. It gets really uncomfortable when I consider how old I am, but truly, like,
each year it gets worse and worse.
It does. Yeah. Just like me. truly, like, this is, of course, all a joke, and it is feeding upon my childhood passion for these characters. I was deeply enamored with Oliver Wood as a child, and it's 100% that Scottish accent. Cedric Diggory, of course, because I saw the first movie and then started reading the books. Cedric Diggory, I fell in love with just purely based on his character and the cute little drawing of him on the cover of Goblet of Fire. I loved Cedric Diggory as a child. And mm-hmm. we can't talk a lot about Cedric Diggory at this point, but he will be a more major character as the series goes on.
Well, even just based on this chapter, he is very kind.
Yeah. So I
like goes out of his way to, and this is skipping ahead.
Yeah.
But when he finds out that Harry passed out and fell, he looks back after catching the snitch.
Right.
And sees Harry on the ground and says, we have to do this again.
Yeah.
This is not okay.
Like, what a decent thing to do.
Yeah. He's like happy to shake everyone's hand in the beginning.
Right.
Like, he seems like a good guy.
And some of that, I think, is just like, yeah, he's a Hufflepuff and he is the perfect example of a Hufflepuff, of like a nice dude who cares about other people, supports other people. And part of it is just this is how we understand Cedric to this point, that he's a good guy. Fred and George do make a comment about him, which they are closer in age to Cedric.
He's too thick to string two words together.
Right. But I kind of interpreted that as more of just a put down. That like, oh, he's this pretty guy. He's a big guy. He's a Quidditch player. The only insult that they can levy at him is an intelligence one.
I wasn't sure if that was they were jealous of Angelina and Katie fawning
right.
over him or if it was trying to make Oliver feel better.
I think it's a little bit of both.
Okay.
Yeah. So Cedric is the captain of the Hufflepuff Quidditch team at this point. It seems like he's been newly promoted to that.
Yes.
We've never heard about the captain
before.
He's
the new seeker though.
Yes. Which is interesting. It is possible maybe that the previous captain or somebody else on the team was the seeker and they graduated or something.
Mm-hmm.
And because we do see players kind of shift around positions, like he might have been a chaser at one point.
Yeah.
Because Harry does think about Cedric's build relative to the seeker thing.
He's not your stereotypic seeker. He is.
Right. He's a little more built. And that some of that might just be he's older than Harry.
Mm-hmm.
But we do get the suggestion that he's a good looking dude.
Mm-hmm.
As far as Cedric's name goes, I do want to talk about that. So according to the Harry Potter lexicon, Cedric is a name invented by Sir Walter Scott for a character in his 1819 novel Ivanhoe, and it's based on the name Cerdic, the name of the legendary founder of the Kingdom of Wessex in the 6th century. Beyond that, there's no real meaning prescribed to the name Cedric.
Okay.
Diggory, however, is interesting. The name, this is again according to the lexicon, the name is possibly a nod to one of the main characters in C.S. Lewis's Narnia tales, Diggory Kirk. Being a Hufflepuff, the name Diggory may also be a reference to badgers digging holes in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
The surname Digger is derived from someone who held the important position of maintaining a dike or ditch.
Okay. Not a grave digger.
No. So the Narnia connection, I think, is an interesting one because Rowling has said that she is a fan of the Narnia books. They mm-hmm. are, I think, one of the other big like fantasy works out there, like Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, Narnia. They're all kind of in that same zone.
Yeah.
Young adult. Diggory is a really important character in the Narnia books. And it has been, God, 15 years since I read the Narnia book. So please, Narnia stans, don't get mad at me. But from what I remember, Diggory is the one of the main characters of the magician's nephew, which is the first Narnia book to be published was The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And we talked about how one of the previous chapter titles might have been a reference to The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, the Boggart in the Wardrobe. Yeah. But the first book to be published was The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And then later, The Magician's Nephew was published. Chronologically,
it comes beforehand.
Yes. And when you get like a box set of the series, The Magician's Nephew is considered number one mm-hmm. in the series. So Diggory is one of the main characters in The Magician's Nephew. And he effectively like creates the universe of Narnia in a way, or at least creates the passage between the real world and Narnia.
Mm-hmm.
He is the housekeeper, I believe, in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. I don't know how well you know The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, but the children,
Peter and Lucy
and Edmund, and there's another one whose name I can't remember, Susan. They are children during World War II, and they're sent off to a house in the country because London is too dangerous to live in because there's bombs and air raids and stuff. So they're sent off to a house in the country, and that is Diggory's house. And Diggory has this wardrobe and kind of urges the children to go through it. So Diggory is a really important figure in the Narnia series. And I'm inclined to think that that is a explicit reference, but it's never been confirmed or anything.
Okay.
Yeah. But I like that connection as a former Narnia fan.
No longer a fan of Narnia.
I haven't read them in so long. And
you're allowed to just enjoy something, even if you don't read it every year.
Right. And that's the thing. I think that if I reread them, I don't know if they would hold up as well.
Okay.
Maybe not hold up. I don't think that's the right term. I think that I wouldn't get the same enjoyment that I got out of them as a child. Whereas like I can reread the Harry Potter books and still get enjoyment out of them. I don't know if that's the case for the Narnia books. And reading about the like very explicit and heavy-handed Christian allegories within it, which totally flew over my head when I read them originally, I think that that might complicate things a little bit for me.
Okay.
I don't know. I would be interested to reread them, but I also like have other things to read.
Like Harry Potter.
For the
11,000th time.
So that is all I will say about Cedric Diggory today. But
just you wait.
Oh, just you wait. This is going to become the Cedric Diggory podcast soon. All right. So we do get that brief mention of Cedric Diggory. They're upset that Slytherin pushed the game off, but they're all kind of trying to cheer up Wood and be like, oh, it's fine. Hufflepuff is going to be easy to beat. Cedric, don't worry about him. It'll be no big deal.
And then Oliver is still very worried.
Yeah.
He becomes another one of the people watching Harry from class to class, but not to protect Harry at all, but to give him pointers.
Yeah.
He follows him around, giving him tips. He even makes him late to Harry's next Defense Against the Arts class.
Yes.
Run by Snape.
Yes. So Harry realizes that he's 10 minutes late for Defense Against the Dark Arts. He runs up there and walks in and he's like, oh, I'm sorry. And then he's like, uh-oh. Snape is subbing in for Lupin because Lupin is feeling under the weather. And Harry does inquire what's wrong with him. With the suggestion there that he is still worried that Snape poisoned Lupin. Mm-hmm. Snape refuses to tell him and takes points off of Gryffindor, both for being late and for asking what's wrong with Lupin.
We do get the affirmation of nothing life-threatening.
Yeah, which is very comforting. Thank you, Snape. Snape is a jerk in this scene. He is so mean.
The whole time.
The whole time. He asks questions, and when people answers him, he gets mad at them Ron does counter when he does this repeatedly to Hermione. You asked us a question and she knows the answer. Why ask if you don't want to be told? Which I'm so happy to see Ron defend Hermione in this scene, because Ron does rag on Hermione a lot for being a know-it-all. And they mention this too after the lesson that, like, Ron calls Hermione a know-it-all at least twice a week. And even he's pissed at Snape for being this
way. The whole class is pissed at Snape.
Yeah.
For calling Hermione a know-it-all, yeah. Which is an insane thing.
She starts crying.
Yeah, that's an insane thing for a teacher to call a student.
I know. God, what was the other thing he did too? He says, like, well, I don't know where you are in your lessons because Lupin didn't leave me any notes. And Hermione is like, oh, well, we've done this and this and this, and we were about to study this. And Snape was like, I wasn't asking for an update. I was just commenting on how disorganized Lupin is.
Yep.
Which is so messed up. Like, don't trash talk your fellow teachers in front of the students. What is the matter with you? And, like, Joe and I have both subbed. You've subbed a lot more than me. And I hope this has never happened to you. But some days you walk into a classroom and there are not sub plans left for you or
yeah.
any kind of substantial information. And you got to go with it. You got to figure it out. You don't walk in and be like, oh, there's nothing here for me. I have no idea what to do with you all. It's so messed up.
It definitely is. And I have more than once gone into a classroom where that teacher wasn't even expecting me. They were being they had a meeting that they were scheduled for, usually CSE meetings. Mm-hmm. And I'm the reminder that they have to leave. So there's nothing like planned or written out. And, you know, you just have to go with it.
Yeah. And also, we don't know what's wrong with Lupin. Like, I have some stuff prepared that, and I wrote this in my sub notes, like, I have stuff posted on our learning management software and I will publish them in advance in the event that I'm out. But in case of an absolute emergency where I'm incapacitated to the extent that I cannot hit the publish button on Schoology, here's what you do. Lupin does not have Blackboard or Canvas or whatever schools use. And he is sick. He's under no obligation. I mean, theoretically, as a teacher, you are under obligation to do this. But, like, you can't get mad at somebody for being sick and not having prepared something in advance. Like, if I woke up one morning and was throwing up and needed to go to the hospital or something, the last thing on my mind is I'm going to put together some sub plans.
Well, that would be why, like, I have a week's worth of emergency sub plans of, like, here's, you know, just kind of printouts of stuff
sure.
that doesn't have anything to do with what we're currently doing, because who knows when we're going to need this.
Right. But, like, Lupin is a first year teacher. This is his first month of teaching. Maybe like it's
second
into the second month of teaching.
I guess it's the start of his third. September, October. And now Halloween
okay.
was yesterday.
Sure.
Today is
right, but it's early in the year, and, like, Snape knows these kids already. He theoretically knows the Defense Against the Dark Arts curriculum because he's apparently qualified to be the teacher of Defense Against the Dark Arts because he keeps interviewing for the job. And the students are trying to catch him up to where they were. And the other thing, too, Snape insists upon them studying werewolves, which we can talk about. But his lesson plan for werewolves is having them copy notes about werewolves.
Yep.
And then later write an essay and submit it to him. He could have done that activity with anything in that book.
Yeah, it didn't have to be that.
Yes.
And sure, there are reasons which
it's hard to talk about why he is so insistent on werewolves, but he wants them to write an essay and submit it to them about how to, like, fight and kill a werewolf.
Yeah.
He's really on that werewolf kick for today.
And you see that. He goes to the very back of the textbook for this.
Yeah.
So he is skipping ahead regardless. You're like, you should know this already.
Yeah.
And then goes to the very end of that year's textbook.
Right.
Doesn't sound like they should know this already.
And, like, I would have to look back on the book lists for this year. But, like, when Harry goes shopping for books, he gets, like, Standard Book of Spells grade 2. I don't think that their Defense Against the Dark Arts book is, like, Defense Against the Dark Arts grade 3. But, like, presumably there would be some kind of standards in place, some sort of
this is a private
pacing
school.
Guide. I know. Yeah. The other thing, too, about private school that I wanted to mention is Ron makes that comment to Snape.
And he gets attention for it.
Yes, he gets attention. And then Harry and Hermione kind of hang out outside the classroom and wait for Ron to come out because Ron has to stay after to arrange it. Ron's punishment is that he is going to be scrubbing the bedpans in the hospital wing without magic.
Which is a crazy thing to have a student do.
And this came up this week. So I share my classroom with a social studies teacher, and he's been teaching about the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And Supreme Court cases, basically, where like the Supreme Court always tries to go back to the Constitution and like point to something in there or go back to former cases.
Are you
going to
talk about cruel and unusual punishment?
Yes. And he pulls in our principal to talk about cruel and unusual punishment. And he was explicitly talking about like if you defaced a wall in the school, like you spray painted it or something, obviously you would get in trouble with that. But your punishment cannot be you have to clean the wall or like clean up the graffiti or whatever. That is illegal in American schools because it is considered cruel and unusual punishment. I'm sure there's also a bent to that of like child labor, but you cannot do that in American schools. If, however, the child who graffitied the wall is sitting down with the principal and says like, hey, I'm really sorry, let me clean it up to make amends, then the child can clean the graffiti.
So if the child offers.
Yes. Because that's not the school saying you have to do this.
Okay.
Hogwarts,
so keep that in mind, friends. Don't offer.
I don't think Ron offered to scrub the bedpans.
No, I know.
Hogwarts apparently does not have this rule. And yes, that goes back to the U.S. Constitution. So like obviously the laws in, well, technically they're in Scotland. Obviously the laws in the U.K. would be different. I have to imagine, though, that this
that
is
definitely
not
qualifies as cruel and unusual.
Yes, I would consider that. And also dangerous, because the things that go into bedpans, and I really don't want to go into detail about what bedpans are. Children, you can ask your parents.
You wear gloves and you don't.
It is highly toxic.
Yeah.
You need like a special certification and special protective equipment to do that kind of thing.
Ron will be fine.
Ugh. Yeah, I was upset about that. I was really upset about Snape in this chapter.
Yeah.
This has been a real book for Snape fans out there to be like, why do you like this dude? I think that Snape fans is indefensible. It's disgusting. He's awful. He makes children cry, like for no reason when they're trying to help
intentionally.
him even. Ugh. All right, let's talk about the Quidditch match. Let's talk about something I like, which is Cedric. So the day of the Quidditch match arrives. Something weird happens, actually. I want to ask you about this. Harry is sleeping the day of the Quidditch match. Peeves blows into his ear.
Yeah, he wakes him up just by blowing in his ears. He's an agent of chaos.
What was the purpose for this?
Just an excuse to get him up. But I feel like...
But like, why Harry specifically?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we'll find out later.
Usually when weird things happen like this, there's some like, ooh, Peeves is actually an agent for Voldemort and Voldemort wanted Harry to wake up early on the day of the court, like something like that. As far as I know, nothing ever comes of this. There's no significance to this.
Well, we'll have to look out for Peeves' actions.
So Peeves wakes Harry up early. He can't go back to sleep. He sees Crookshanks lurking outside of the...
The other part is, like, there's a really bad thunderstorm that prevents Harry from falling back asleep. Mm-hmm. It would have been so easy for the thunderstorm to be the thing that wakes Harry up.
Right? Why did it have to be Peeves blowing in his ear?
There has to be something we'll find out later. Like there better be, because there's no real reason for it to just be Peeves. Peeves is just... You know, goofing around and
blowing in his ear too.
Yeah.
That is such a weird thing to do.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, so Harry gets up. He decides, like, whatever. I'm up now.
He just waits around until it's time for breakfast, then goes eats breakfast.
Yes, but he does see Crookshanks lurking around, and he pushes Crookshanks out of the room and says, like, go chase another mouse, like, leave Scabbers alone, basically.
Yep.
So that's the update in the recurring Crookshanks wants to eat Scabbers plot. But Harry basically grabs his stuff and heads out.
How do you feel about Quidditch matches not being called off for thunderstorms?
So that's the thing. The weather is really bad. And like, this isn't just like a little drizzle. Like, this is a bad storm that is going on today. And the book notes that like, oh, Hogwarts doesn't cancel the Quidditch match for a trifle like a thunderstorm. This seems dangerous because, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but things that are higher up in the sky are more likely to be struck by lightning.
That is correct.
So they are running the risk of being struck by lightning. And like the other thing is,
theoretically, they don't have metal on them, except for, of course, Harry's glasses.
The brooms have metal, too. They have those like foot pieces, at least in the movie.
In the movies, they do. the snitch is metal.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, they have magic. Can't they just make like a bubble over the Quidditch pitch and so that the weather is good all the time?
I have no idea.
And then when I was thinking about that, I was like, well, maybe it's important to have that challenge of like, okay, how do you play in these different conditions? Which I assume is a thing in other sports, like with golf, when the wind is different, that's something that a player has to adjust for.
With football, we would always play in the rain.
Okay.
But if there was ever thunderstorm.
Yeah. Like it's just a safety thing.
One lightning strike and the game was canceled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was annoying. I don't care for that. I could see an argument for like, it's raining, play anyway. It's fine. You'll just get wet. But thunder is different.
Pretty bad.
Yeah. But they're playing anyway. Harry flies around a bit. He gets real wet. He can't see anything through his glasses, which are getting all wet. Hermione does charm them, and we'll talk about that later.
Well, do you want to talk about how worried Oliver was? He doesn't even like give them a speech in the locker room.
Yeah.
He's
spooked.
he's spooked.
Yeah.
He just makes some weird noises and then gestures to the door.
Mm-hmm.
He like Oliver Wood smiles at him as they walk down Cedric Diggory smiles at them while they walk down, and Oliver just nods at him. He can't get anything out. And nobody can hear anything. Like,
right.
They can't hear if people are clapping right now.
Yeah, when Wood calls a timeout and they all, like, gather around, Harry asks, what's the score? Because, like, he can't see what's going on down there.
He
can't hear the announcements or anything. So it's a mess.
It is. And then Hermione is allowed to just come onto the field,
yeah.
shows up right away. And also, she didn't think to do that earlier. Although, I guess Harry didn't walk down with Ron.
True.
And
okay.
Hermione.
Right. But we'll talk about that scene later. Harry's flying around. Things aren't going too well. He gets a glimpse of the snitch and starts to fly after it. And then he sees a dog.
Oh, he doesn't even get a glimpse of the snitch.
I thought he saw like a flash of it.
Well, Oliver points out Cedric Diggory already chasing the snitch.
Oh, okay.
So Harry goes to go after it. And then sees the silhouette of the dog, followed by a cold feeling and hundreds of Dementors, which it didn't occur to me. I don't know how many entrances to the Hogwarts grounds there are, but hundreds seems like a lot of Dementors.
Yeah. Well, maybe the Dementors can apparate in and out of Hogwarts. Maybe more showed up for the Quidditch game. But yes, he sees all these Dementors. He feels cold. And then he hears something. He hears this exchange. Not Harry, not Harry. Please not Harry.
Stand aside, you silly girl. Stand aside now.
Not Harry. Please no. Take me. Kill me instead. This is not confirmed at this point, but we can safely assume what is happening here, what he is flashing back to, the night his parents died.
We already know that Harry won the battle in the first book because his mom sacrificed herself for Harry to live.
Right. Lily did not need to die is an important thing to remember and an important thing to take away from this exchange, assuming that Harry is... this flashback is accurate, basically, that Voldemort, the second speaker in this, stand aside now. He's giving her the option, the chance to step aside.
Not even giving her the option. He's commanding her, get out of the way.
Right. But like, if he was there to kill Lily, he would have just killed Lily.
Yeah.
He is clearly going after Harry specifically.
Yes.
Yeah. So this is something we really can't talk about in too much depth, but those are two important things to remember as the series goes on. Interesting, too, though, that Harry has this clear of a memory of it, because he was 1 year old at this point.
Mm-hmm.
He apparently had enough of a facility with language to remember this conversation.
I mean, this is something that's like pulled from him. He's never remembered this. He's had like memories of green flashes. And now with the Dementors pulling this out of him.
I don't pretend to know how memory works. And I know that trauma can influence memory in some interesting ways, both in the sense that you can remember a traumatic experience really, really vividly, but also trauma can mess up memories, which is why I wanted to note that thing if we are to assume that this is an accurate recollection of the event. Mm-hmm. Trauma can make memories very fuzzy. It can make sequencing events very fuzzy. And especially when you have the memory capacity of a one-year-old, it's interesting that he has this vivid of a flashback. Yes. And this specific of a flashback. Again, we can't talk about it fully at this point.
But it is pretty safe to assume this is his mother and Voldemort.
Right. Harry passes out, falls off of his broom, wakes up in the hospital wing.
But he didn't even break his glasses.
Yeah, and that's something we'll talk about too when we get to Spell of the Week. Harry wakes up in the hospital wing. Everybody tells him kind of what happened, including that Cedric caught the snitch and then realized what happened with Harry and wanted the rematch. Wood, interestingly enough, says no to the rematch, says that Cedric won fair and square.
Yeah, Wood admitted it.
Yeah, which is, I guess, decent of him. Was it really fair and square, though?
He, like, Harry fell, but...
He was onto the switch already?
He was on his way. It's not like Cedric ignored it and minutes later.
Sure. Like, it wasn't that Cedric saw Harry was all messed up and was like, now's my chance. It wasn't that.
No, it was he caught the snitch.
And then realized what happened.
And then realized.
Yeah.
But he caught it just after Harry fell.
Right.
And it's not like Harry fell for a long time.
Sure. Yeah.
I don't think Harry necessarily would have caught up given that, like, because he paused. Cedric was well ahead of him.
Yeah.
He paused to look at the dog.
Mm-hmm.
And then he paused to look at the Dementors. And then he just fell.
Yeah. I think that you could potentially make the argument that, like, this was not a fair match to begin with the weather conditions. But that would require whoever facilitates the Quidditch games, I guess, Madam Hooch, saying like, oh, no, I was wrong. We shouldn't have had a game today. So, yeah.
But I mean, it was already established they were going to have a game in this weather anyway.
Right. So. I'm saying that like if Wood was a bad sportsman.
Yes.
He could have made that argument of like the conditions were bad. The Dementors shouldn't have been there. And that's what messed Harry up. If that hadn't happened, maybe he could have caught the snitch. But I agree. I think that this was a fair catch on Cedric's part.
Yes. I don't think he definitely didn't do anything malicious. And he fully tried to.
Yeah.
Call
Cedric's
it off
a good
afterwards.
Dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he had his head in the game and he found that snitch. And
I don't want to hear had his head in the game. Don't find a different way of saying that.
He was very focused on.
Thank you.
He was very focused on getting the snitch and,
good.
You know, doing his job.
Right. It takes away the High School Musical flashback.
I'm sorry that you're so hyper fixated on that. So
Harry wakes up in the hospital wing. Everybody kind of fills him in on what happened. They say that he fell about 50 feet, which I have absolutely no context for how high that is. That doesn't seem that high.
50 feet would be about 5 stories.
Okay. All right. Okay. Yeah, that does seem dangerous.
Like a little less than 5 stories, because sometimes they're like a story is a little
shorter
more than
ceilings.
10 feet.
Okay. They do say that Dumbledore was pissed that the Dementors were there at all, that he cast some spell to make Harry slow down. And that his glasses didn't break either. There is some bad news, however, besides losing the Quidditch game, which Harry is devastated about.
He's for the first time ever, he had lost. Is that true?
Yeah.
I guess my first thought was like, oh, when he broke his arm.
He still caught the snitch.
He still caught the snitch.
He swallowed it that other time.
That was the same time. No.
No.
That was
different events. Different books.
Different books.
Yeah. Oh, he always wins through some kind of MacGuffin or some kind of ridiculous
thing.
Well,
the ones that they focus on.
Right. Yeah.
Presumably he plays 4 games a year.
Yeah. We don't hear about and we don't hear about him losing ever. So, yeah, this is the first
3 games
loss.
A year. 3 games a year.
Well, but then, yeah, I guess. So this is the first game that they lost, and a longtime companion of Harry's has left us.
Murdered by the Whomping Willow.
His Nimbus 2000 flew into the tree, or the wind blew it into the tree.
Yep.
Which, how close is the Quidditch pitch to the Whomping Willow?
He was 50 feet in the air, and the wind was strong.
Okay.
Why not?
But that doesn't answer my question.
What are the odds a car flies into that tree anyway?
Okay, fair. The Whomping Willow just has this like gravitational pull.
Yeah.
Everything just gets sucked into the Whomping Willow.
It is a fun reminder that that thing still exists.
Yes, which we needed.
Yeah.
So the broom is dead.
Broom
it has
is
been
dead.
Destroyed.
Hermione was given
The pieces
by Flitwick, I think. I don't know why Flitwick was the one to
be like, Hermione, you got to break the news. You got to tell him.
Well, not even that, but like, why did Flitwick go collect the pieces of that room? Imagine a teacher after a student gets hurt and like, I'm going to pick up all the little bits and pieces of your vehicle.
Yeah, that's silly.
It's very silly.
Yeah.
Just imagining Flitwick picking up sticks from the ground, be like, is this one a branch or is this part of his broomstick?
Yeah. But that's the chapter. That's where it ends on a real bummer note.
Yeah.
So does that bring us to spell of the week?
Yes, it does. So our spell this week is impervious, which should be fairly obvious what it does. Or at least the etymology. What does entomology mean? Nothing.
The study of Entenmann's donuts.
Yeah. Oh, Entenmann's cookies are real good.
Oh my God. I would love like some donuts and cookies right now.
So again, the incantation is impervious, which means not allowing something to pass through or not penetrable.
Impenetrable, we might say.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or impervious.
Yeah.
It obviously makes Harry's glasses repel water. It makes an object repel water and mist.
And apparently makes it so it can't break when it falls 50 feet.
Now, I'm not sure if that is part of the impervious spell or just because
Dumbledore
slowed him down.
I think was the spell that Hermione did.
It made it impervious to hitting the ground.
Yeah, no, I think it is Dumbledore's spell. I think that was a like it was such a gentle drop that Dumbledore created for him that not even his glasses broke.
Yeah, if only Harry held onto the broom and that fell with him.
To be fair, he passed out.
Yeah.
I've passed out and you do not, you can't decide what you're going to do.
No, not at all. Yeah, my first, at least diagnosed concussion was for me passing out.
I didn't know you had a concussion.
Yeah, it was in high school.
Was it from football?
Yep.
Okay.
But it was me passing out from not drinking enough water and hitting the ground.
All right. Not an actual football injury. Didn't see enough play time to get one of those.
Well, it was just during practice.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't believe it was part of what made Harry's glasses not break. It seems like it would be safe to assume, but there's no concrete information to say that is true.
Mm-hmm.
It really is just that it prevents it from getting water on it.
Yep.
And it's used a few times later of just like, it's a convenient thing.
Yeah.
And it would have been nice if Hermione used it on his clothes as well.
I always imagine when I think of this spell, my grandma used to talk about when we were kids, like she would say like, oh, I wish I had little windshield wipers on my glasses. And that's what I think of when I think of this spell.
The impervious spell would be so convenient during this pandemic.
Oh, for the fog?
To prevent it from prevent the glasses from fogging up.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's what your anti-fog spray, the little liquid you have is the impervious charm. Just liquefied.
Yeah, if only it worked better.
Mm-hmm. So that's spell of the week.
That is spell of the week.
Yes. And we unfortunately don't have any emails to read this episode.
But if you'd like to read it, if you would like to send us an email, you can send it to Patrivius Totalis. You can send it to owlpost@patriviustotalis.com.
Yeah, there you go.
That is owlpost@patriviustotalis.com because you clearly know how to spell podcast name and not owl post.
Well, listen, I know that I don't enunciate well all the time, so I want to spell the important bit. They can get the podcast name from the app, but they can't get the owl post. Well, if they check the show notes, they can. And on the note of show notes, you can go to our website, podtrivigustotalis.com, to find detailed show notes and listen to our episodes, find a fun button that lets you subscribe, and so on. Of course, you can review us on your podcast platform of choice, Apple Podcasts, Podchaser. Podchaser is doing a promotion right now where they donate to Meals on Wheels again for every review that you leave. So I don't know. go and leave us a review on Podchaser. That's a great
review.
Cause.
A whole bunch of random things,
yeah,
too.
Well, but yeah, I think that you can review episodes individually. So we have, I think this is episode 39, I believe, for us. So if you leave a review on every single episode of Podtrificus Totalis, that will be 39 donations to Meals on Wheels.
Do you know the donation?
I don't. I saw an email about it a couple hours ago and did not open it.
Okay.
Yep. But so that is back, and I do encourage you to do that. And of course, you can subscribe to us wherever you find podcasts. Follow us on social media. I check Twitter, and that's about it. But we are at Podtrificus on Twitter. And of course, you can join us next week for Chapter 10,
The Marauder's Map.